The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. Custom software needs vary significantly. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. Harnessing the technical excellence of Bulgaria, MentorMate provides end-to-end software services in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer world-class care through technology. Learn more at MentorMate.com. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone out there in Medical Alley. Thank you again for joining us on another episode of the Medical Alley podcast. I'm so pleased to be joined today by a really exciting guest with a really fascinating company out in the ecosystem. I'm joined by Second Wave Systems CEO Anuj Bhadwaj. Anuj, thank you for joining us. Maybe you could start with, tell us a little bit about what is Second Wave and tell us a little bit about your background, what you've been up to.
Absolutely. First, thank you, Frank, for having me here and doing this podcast. Always a pleasure to talk to you and really appreciate this opportunity for us here at Second Wave. Thank you for the kind introduction. My name is Anuj Bhadwaj, CEO and co-founder of Second Wave Systems. I have been involved in Second Wave for about 3 years now. My background before that is primarily in the engineering field, but also in business, and been on the world of the entrepreneurial side for about 10 years. Before that, worked at large companies, including 3M, Intel, and then shortly before starting Second Wave, Medtronic as well. It's been a very exciting time here at Second Wave, and I'll get into some of those details, which I'm sure you might be interested in hearing about. Introduction to Second Wave, we're as I mentioned, about a three-year-old startup company that's building a wearable medical device using ultrasound to deliver focused ultrasound energy into the body to target organs, cells, nerves deep within the body on this wearable platform. So we've some of us who have been aware of this kind of growing field of ultrasound for therapy are aware of the fact that there's a lot you can do with ultrasound beyond what we generally see in diagnostic imaging. And a lot of research, really good research, has been going on for about 10 to 15 years now, accelerated in the last 5 years. What makes us at Second Wave a little bit different is our aim, mission really, to bring this technology to the mainstream, bring costs down, make it scalable and manufacturable in a way that masses of people can use it to treat disorders and provide therapy that right now just we can't reach with medical devices that are expensive and large and bulky and in some cases implantable technology, just we can't reach those numbers as well. So at Second Wave, we're really trying to change this and shift things towards bringing lower cost but still high performing devices to the mainstream.
It's a very exciting area where it seems like we're crossing over from science and research into product and application very rapidly. And we'll dive into that a bit more in a moment here, but I'm always curious about, you know, entrepreneurs' motivations and of all the things you could do, what is it that draws you to this, or what's kind of your why for being involved in this sort of thing?
Yeah, great question. My background is not in the biological field. I have my major in college was mechanical engineering. I've always been passionate about product design and development, but my motivation to really dive deep into med tech and building medical devices and trying to help people in this space started first when the technology at a company that I started running 10 years ago called the Ultran Group started being applied for medical therapeutic purposes. And I saw that there's an opportunity here with technology that was originally designed and developed for a completely different reason. Now, if we have the ability to take that and help people with it, this feels a lot more rewarding. It was more a feeling than it was some kind of calculated decision. Just instinctively, I was drawn towards the idea of getting our technology and building products with it that we could use to help people. Another thing that really affected me, I think growing up, I kind of had an aversion to hospitals and medicine and doctors. I just kind of, it never appealed to me. And it was always something I almost tried to avoid. But in 2011, my mother was diagnosed with a terminal form of cancer. And she fought it for a year, ultimately couldn't defeat it, but was extremely courageous in that battle. But I learned a lot in that period. One, you know, had to confront my fear of hospitals and illness and those areas that kind of always seemed a little bit scary almost to me. And two, just seeing that the patient experience is really difficult for most people, depending on what you might be dealing with. And if we could somehow apply technology that's in our hands right now and make that better to help people across the board or wherever it is we can apply it, it almost felt like a responsibility. And especially for my mother, who had been working, you know, in this company that we spun Second Wave out of, it was founded by my parents 40 plus years ago, and she worked there for her whole career. And, you know, if she ultimately couldn't survive to see what we can make of it, I'm certain that she would want to know that what she put her life and career into was used for something that really helped people. And, you know, especially considering the experience she had. So that further motivated me to do what we're doing. And I've just been super fortunate to be able to even get to this point. We have aspirations to go a lot further, but it's I'll talk more about it, but it's the culmination of a lot of work from a lot of people that's been able to get us here and their motivations as well.
Thank you for sharing that story. That's a great background, and it really gives some depth to what you're doing and the long history of it. And I super appreciate you talk about the patient experience part of it. And say, as an industry, we've always been great at developing great technologies, developing the next therapies, but we've not always been great at making the experience, the people who have to live with it, great. And so bringing that, those two together, improving the experience and advancing therapies, it's the place we've all got to be. Like, we need to be there if we're going to get healthcare better.
Totally agree.
Yeah. You mentioned other team members and some of the work that you're doing. I'd be curious if you talk about some of the other people you're working with and, like, where did this technology and where did the product come out of or originate from?
Yeah, good question. So I mentioned that we spun Second Wave out of another company. That company is called the Ultran Group. It was founded by my parents 43 years ago. I didn't intend on working there, but it just so happened. In 2011, they needed some help. I was happy to leave a job I didn't love very much and see what I could do, you know, running a small business. Started doing that and was extremely lucky to bring in a great friend of mine from graduate school, Kash Patel, to join me just less than a year after I joined. And we worked really hard to kind of turn this company around. The core product in the main market was not med tech, though. So we were able to do that. And again, this field is non-destructive testing, testing a lot of aerospace and industrial materials. So that's where we came from. We took technology, though, that was developed at this company, Ultran, partly by my father, as well as other engineers that worked at the company. And this was kind of a unique type of ultrasound that has really high performance and high efficiency at a frequency range that we consider to be low or medium, different than the diagnostic ultrasound we see often. And this advancement, researchers caught wind of it and they started using it, realized that they could use it to deliver focused energy into the body. And they were primarily using it for deep brain stimulation. And we realized that, okay, we can optimize this, make it better, learn more about how we can tweak it to get higher performance and deeper targets in the body and deliver energy more efficiently in the body. And so that really started fascinating me. And as I mentioned before, that kind of transformation in my motivation shifted a bit towards, okay, this isn't something that's going to, you know, earn money for our small business today, but it's a huge opportunity in the future, both financially, but also just to make an impact in this sector. And so we started to build it for purposes that, you know, actually could be used practically, not just with large and expensive equipment. And that's when we started doing a joint development program with Medtronic. I stepped down as the CEO of Ultran. Cash took over, and I was leading a strategic effort with Medtronic to build a device that we could use and put on a wearable platform. We made a lot of headway, and they still potentially work on that program. But I ultimately came back to Ultran, and that's when we got the opportunity to get a Small Business Innovation Research Award, SBIR, from DARPA. And that DARPA award, it was a phase one to begin with, so a smaller project. But in that, I was fortunate enough during my time at Medtronic to meet a professor at the University of Minnesota, Hubert Lim. And Hubert teamed up with us on that phase one SBIR and actually just brought resources to it that were well above and beyond what a normal phase one SBIR performer is expected. And with his help, we won the phase two SBIR. And that's when we officially spun out this new company, Second Wave, and that was in 2019. And so with that, another partner joined, Jeff Hyman, who's another friend from graduate school. So he's a little bit of a pattern you see here. He brought 20 years of personal industry experience for MedTech, which is really critical for us. And we needed that at this point. You know, me and Cash both come from engineering and device technology development backgrounds. Hubert brings clinical and scientific background and also some industry experience. And Jeff brought, again, those decades of industry experience. And together, we took this and started growing it. And I can talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that we've done in growth in the last year and a half, which have really been accelerated, especially during this pandemic. But those are the partners. We're growing yet more. There's other really critical key contributors that have helped us, especially in this, again, this last year.
And I do want to talk about that, the growth you guys are experiencing, but I want to come back to first something you said towards the beginning here around, if some of the original use of this was in like deep brain stimulation, being able to get energy deep into the body. And that's often, I think, what people think of. They think of like deep brain stimulation, implantable neurostimulators. You guys are doing something quite a bit different with a non-invasive, a wearable type technology, which patient experience, great, but also technologically and therapeutically quite a breakthrough. Can you talk a bit more about that and like, what does that mean for health?
Yeah, great point. I suppose I kind of glossed over that one. So you're right. In the industry and in the field of neuromodulation, we know implantable neurostimulators really well. Deep brain, spinal cord, sacral nerve stim implants for pelvic health. But what we're doing is, as you said, fundamentally different. We're using acoustic energy as opposed to electrical stimulation. The acoustic energy can cause the modulation of cells and nerves in the body to cause certain effects. And there's many different things you can use this for. There's many unknown elements that it could be applied for as well. So in order to be able to deliver acoustic energy though, there are limits to the method you can use to do that. We use ultrasound. So ultrasound is obviously it's like sound, and we know it again for diagnostic imaging applications. But because we're operating at higher frequencies, we can actually focus that energy reasonably accurately. There are limits to what we can do with it, and there's a lot of dependence as well, like frequency and size and amplitude. But the technology that we've developed and what we're applying on a wearable platform can be used to target, again, nerves and cells at specific depths within the body. It could range from a few millimeters to even about 15 centimeters deep in the body. And that can cause an effect. And I'll talk about some of the things we're doing with respect to inflammation treatment. That's very similar to what you would get with an implantable neurostimulating device. And so this area, I mean, we're very confident that it is going to be a future technology and modality in the med tech industry. I don't see it replacing a lot of the things that we do with implantable neurostimulators, but what I see is it enhancing and supplementing and complementing areas that we currently don't have a great ability to target. So a lot of the neurostimulators we use now are larger. The smallest ones may still be 10 cc in volume. And there's limits to where you can put those in the body. You can't hit certain nerves or organs with those, you know, really good for things like spinal cord stimulator, but not good for trying to hit a target in your arms or your legs or even some of the areas in your torso. They also require cut down surgeries. So it's a big deal if you want to get an implantable neurostimulator right now. what we have the ability to do, and again, it doesn't work for everything, but where it does work, it's non-invasive, it's worn on the body. The treatments that we're going after are episodic. So a patient may use it once a day, maybe three times a week. They don't need it all day, every day. So if you have lower back pain associated with serious trauma, it's probably better to have an implantable neurostimulator that can activate all the time. If you have something like one of the fields that folks are trying to break into with minimally invasive and maybe non-invasive therapies is pelvic health, where you maybe need stimulation a few times a week. Well, that could be an opportunity if you hit a peripheral nerve target that is different from something like the sacral nerve. So for example, the tibial nerve in your leg is a nerve that you can't really get a large neurostimulator into. So a lot of companies like Blue One Medical being one of them have minimally invasive, smaller implants that they put in there, and the treatment's episodic. Those are the areas that I think are also candidates for non-invasive ultrasound where it can actually apply.
And can you mentioned inflammation briefly. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the areas you are working on today and what you see the opportunity as?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we're building a platform technology, and we see a lot of widespread uses for it. But the first area that we're applying this towards is using our ultrasound energy delivery devices to stimulate the spleen and cause the body to inhibit the release of inflammatory cytokines. So these cytokines are proteins that everyone's body produces, but in some cases, they can cause inflammation, unwanted inflammation. And in the more extreme examples, people who have chronic inflammation disorders, like rheumatoid arthritis, their bodies are in kind of an overdrive state. Their immune system's overreacting to a problem in their body and attacking the body in a way that we wouldn't want. What we're doing is we're delivering ultrasound energy a very specific way to the spleen, which is in a person's torso on their left side. That energy is received and causes the inhibition of the release of those cytokines and reduces the overinflammation that patients experience. The opportunity now, I mean, what we're doing this, and the rheumatologists that we work with are very excited about this because again, we talked about patient experience. The patient experience for people who have chronic inflammation, like RA, rheumatoid arthritis, they deal with just pain on a constant basis. The treatments that they have, they may not respond to them. A very large portion, 1/3 of patients don't respond to the biologics that are prescribed to them. Some of them are on some pretty uncomfortable therapeutics like methotrexate. If we can supplement that, reduce their need to take medications and treatments that are just not desirable or have side effects that are kind of extreme, there's a great opportunity here. And again, as opposed to implantable devices, the experience of using our device is not so extreme. We can reach patients. We could be prescribed to patients. They could use our device, wear it on their body a few times a week without the commitment of having something implanted in their body.
It's very exciting and such a major health issue. I can say from some experience, a number of years ago, had a health condition that led to that sort of thing and had the arthritis temporarily. The treatments suck. Like, they're not great. And if they work, they work. But for a lot of people, they don't. So more power to you.
Yep.
Another piece you had mentioned in there that we've seen more often with startups, but still I don't think is as common or maybe as normal as it should be, is you mentioned the grants that you guys got, SBIR grants as part of your funding stack. You talked a little bit about just the experience of going after those, getting them, and, you know, would you recommend that other companies as they're building, that they look at SBIR or other federal grants as a part of their funding activity?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. It's kind of unique, I think, as we learn more about this space and startups that have some similarities to us. The way that we have been funded is really different. It's we don't have any, to date, we don't have any dilutive investment in our company. All of the funding either came from our prior parent company, smaller amount, but we're talking more like 4 years ago or more, everything other than that comes from government awards, government contracts. So it started with our SBIR award from DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. They funded our phase one and then our phase two and have been huge supporters of our work. We, you know, our program manager is Dr. Eric Van Giesen, and he's been a huge supporter of this area, treatment of inflammation using non-invasive and minimally invasive therapies. And before that, we had Colonel Matt Hepburn was our program manager, and both have been great champions of our work. So we've been very lucky to have gotten that SBIR funding. We did intend, by the way, to raise a private investment round in 2020, but what actually a set of events that we didn't anticipate transpired, whereby we had this, of course, as we all know, serious pandemic and the onset of it in early 2020. With it came a lot of investment in technologies that had the potential to treat inflammation disorders. What happened, what we were made aware of in early 2020 is the fact that the therapy we were working on to treat chronic inflammation might have applicability towards treating the onset of what we call a cytokine storm in the extreme cases of COVID-19, causing a hyperinflammatory state for patients. And there was a group in the Department of Defense called MCDC. It's a medical consortium in the DoD. And we applied for and won another award from them to build devices actually that were developed with DARPA and perform clinical trials to get emergency use authorization from FDA to treat COVID-19 induced hyperinflammation. In addition to that, we got more funding from DARPA to add on to our SBIR and improve our device, enhance the device to be able to treat that hyperinflammation even better. And then more recently, just in the last 1 month, we were contracted another award from MCDC to perform additional clinical trials to get full FDA approval for hyperinflammation treatment. So to date, we've been awarded $10.7 million from DARPA and MCDC, all within the Department of Defense, that's funded the work that we've done in terms of development of the device from DARPA, and then the application of that towards treatment of hyperinflammation, as well as the work that we're doing in rheumatoid arthritis. So I do want to mention that we're still on track to treat rheumatoid arthritis. We're kicking off a pilot human study in January for rheumatoid arthritis, in addition to the COVID trials that we're running.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, both the public health side of it, we need better treatments for everything going on with COVID, but also how it's helped advance the company. And so it sounds like, you know, through that grant support, you'll have a developed device. You may not have effectiveness trials done as far as the inflammation product, but safety profile well understood, like a lot of work kind of put in place to set you up for the inflammatory market.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been huge for us. And the support, again, I can't say enough to both DARPA and MCDC. I mentioned our DARPA program managers at MCDC. It was originally Camilo Morales and now Dr. Janice Dewey. And they and their teams have been tremendously supportive of the work that we're doing. I think we've been extremely fortunate to have been able to build relationships with these folks in the US government. And you mentioned advice for other companies. I definitely would advise going out there and seeing what kind of SBIRs exist. I think that raising private investment is also not a bad thing. It's just something we haven't done. I do expect us to raise private investment in the future. But if there's opportunities to get non-dilutive investment and government awards, I mean, it's worked out very well for us. It's not easy all the time. We've applied for SBIRs, especially at Altran, that haven't always been awarded. I think that we just fell into the right place at the right time, where, especially where DARPA was concerned, we happened to be working on something that was exactly what they were asking for in their SBIR solicitation. So it really, we got lucky more than anything. And then again, it happened with COVID-19, where we wanted to get involved. We wanted to be able to help where we could in the pandemic. And the DoD saw what we were doing and found it very interesting. And again, one of those things where there's kind of a lower bar, a lower effort to get in with a non-invasive, lower cost wearable, as opposed to the investment required to run a clinical trial for a new drug or an implantable medical device. So that's another thing that's just attractive about, I think, what we're doing to the investor, the fact that there's a lower bar than what we're used to in the field of healthcare to trying to get adoption and even run a trial.
Yeah, there's a bunch of great insights in there of taking advantage of all the resources that are out there, understanding where your technology and company can fit into the needs of, in this case, the military or a public health crisis, and leveraging that to create value in a company so that when you do go and raise with private equity or venture capital or whatever it might be, you're in a better position than if you were starting from scratch. Like, more power to you. Mm-hmm. As we come towards the end, maybe the last question I want to ask you. So you've had this great set of experiences. You talked about starting out as a mechanical engineer, running the Altran Group for a while, now this startup. You know, what's the journey been like, say, going from Altran Group, an established small business family company, into starting a new venture, leveraging the technology was there? How's it been for you as a leader and as a CEO to change throughout this? And then, you know, throw in a pandemic in the middle of it and all that fun.
Yeah, good question. Sometimes it's hard to wrap my head around exactly the you know, what goes behind all of that. When things move quickly, you just kind of act or even react. And you look back later and try to make some sense of what exactly happened. But I do like the question. And there's a huge difference between the small company that we came from at Altran to what we're trying to do at Second Wave. Altran is also a high risk endeavor. I don't think it's necessarily terribly different from Second Wave. The biggest difference is that it is established. It does have a brand and a reputation, makes a product that Altran's been making for decades, though there are different variations and improvements upon it. The business of Altran, though, and the way that the company runs is really different in that it has actual customers. So running Altran was a major shift for me to go from a big company where I'd been involved in product development, technology development, and even going way back to my 3M experiences, supporting manufacturing plants and laboratories, to now having to sell a product and work with customers, which is really challenging. So that's something that Altran has to do, and it's something we got really used to doing. It's definitely nice to have that steady stream of revenue, but Altran and the folks there that run it, they do an excellent job of continuing to make sure that happens and get growth in the company. So it definitely is a little bit scary to step away from that into Second Wave, where now the timescale is a little bit shorter. We're looking at 6, 8, 12 months out. Where's our funding going to come from? What objectives do we have to fulfill? It's been really nice at that same note to have backing from the federal government and contracts from them. The SBIR, for example, that runs for a period of 3 years, though we've got just a year left on that now. So we definitely, even beyond that, had to consider raising additional money to do the work that we're doing, especially where the pandemic and the clinical trials associated with the pandemic are concerned. So it's a kind of a bigger environment in terms of the amount of money we need to operate and how quickly we have to keep reevaluating ourselves and to some degree reinventing the way we think about things. It's not that our plan necessarily changes, but we have to change along the way. For example, we came from product and technology development. We shifted into clinical trials and clinical studies. Now we're really focusing a lot on regulatory strategy and regulatory submissions and quality in order to get our company aligned and prepared for those next steps of selling a medical device.
It's a really great perspective that, yeah, a small business, even if established, there's still risk in it. There's still challenges in it. It's a different sort. And now you're going into, yeah, just it's new challenges. And that might be a great spot to wrap it up. It's always new challenges. It's always something interesting. And when I think of non-invasive technology, it's always fascinating what can be done. So I want to say thank you for spending the time with us and sharing some of your perspective. And I'm sure we'll hear much, much more from you and from Second Wave Systems very soon.
Thank you, Frank. Really appreciate the time today and always the opportunity to talk to you and your support and Medical Alley's support for us. It's you've done quite a lot, and we really do enjoy working with you and appreciate these opportunities.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. And folks, that is the Medical Alley podcast. If you're not already a subscriber, check us out on medicalalleypodcast.org, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Have a great day.